Hello, everyone, and welcome. I am Jason Dinges. This is Lost Rhetoric, a dim space for light hearts where we discuss all manner of odd. This week, Eris Hunter Wales is joining me. He's a drummer. He's in the bands Bewitcher and Order of the Gash, a couple personal favorites of mine. And that is his real name, Eris Hunter Wales. I've known him for a long time, and I've always told him he's got possibly the greatest name on the planet. But we are going to discuss a few rock and roll and metal songs throughout history that have a kind of a extraterrestrial UFO alien theme to them. They were either inspired by real events that happened to someone else or happened to them. And they ended up writing songs about it. And we're going to go through a few of our favorites. So I'm looking forward to that discussion. And I hope you are too. But let's talk about last week. Quinn Schwartz from the Portland band Ghost Frog was with me. And we went through some UFO cults. And kind of told their story. As you know, as best we could. We went through a list of some interesting people. And with some very different results, I guess. These cults are interesting, to say the least. So if you want to go back and listen to that, check out episode 43. I think it's one of the best I've ever done. But you be the judge. Go listen to it. And if you have listened to it, thank you. I really, really appreciate it. You can find that episode at LostRhetoric.com. You can find not only every single show and all of the show notes, you can find all the Spotify playlists that go along with the episodes, and you can find the shop that has all of the merchandise I have for sale. I would love for you to check it out and buy something. I want to go to the post office every day and send things out to you. I got shirts, koozies, mugs, pins, stickers, all that stuff. So check it out. I think everything's pretty reasonably priced. Look at it. Let me know what you think. And if you feel so inclined, order something. I would really, really appreciate it. But let's get into that last episode and who listened to it the most. Let's get into the top five. Coming in at number five, Anchorage, Alaska. I think that's where Quinn is from. So that makes sense. Thank you, Anchorage. Number four, Alhambra, Arizona, new to the top five. Number three, Aloha, Oregon, still hanging in there. Thank you, Aloha. And at number two, kind of a hybrid here, we got Los Angeles and Compton, California. I guess technically you're two different cities, but for the purposes of the top five, you're one. So thank you, Los Angeles. Thank you, Compton. And number one, Richmond, Virginia. Thank you all for listening. I really, really appreciate it. Now, what am I listening to? Well, last week I was listening to Boy Genius. I still am. And I talked about how I have been listening to Phoebe Bridgers a lot. But I hadn't checked out the other two ladies, Julian Baker and Lucy Dacus. Well, I took care of that. And I listened to the new Julian Baker record, Little Oblivions, out on Matador Records. And I listened to the new, or I listened to the old Lucy Dacus record called Historian from 2018. But she has a new single that just came out yesterday called Hot and Heavy. And she's also on Matador Records. And they're both great. It's just like, you know, kind of like sad girl indie rock. But with really great lyrics. They're great lyricists, you know. They're poets, and they write great music. So check out Julian Baker. Check out Lucy Dacus. Excellent. I'm looking forward to the Lucy Dacus album when it comes out. Conway the Machine has a new album. I've talked about Conway before. He's one of my favorite rappers. He comes out with an album every few months, it seems. And his new one is called La Machina, which I can only assume is the machine in Spanish. But typical, amazing Conway the Machine, man. One of the best doing it right now. Highly recommend checking him out. a band called Restraining Order from Western Massachusetts and Connecticut, it says, you know, on their website. They have an album from 2019 called This World Is Too Much on Triple B Records. And they're really good, dude. They're like energetic hardcore punk. They got an old school vibe. They kind of remind me of a lot of old school straight edge hardcore bands from the 80s. But with like, they're a little tougher musically. But and I don't even know if they're straight edge or not. I don't really give a shit. But they kind of remind me of some of those bands. But yeah, really, really good hardcore punk, Restraining Order. Check that shit out. And the last thing I've been listening to, and it's fitting, it's the new Bewitcher record called Cursed Be Thy Kingdom on Century Media. A little plug for Eris here. it's a great record, man. I'm not going to talk about it too much. We're going to mention it, I'm sure, in the discussion. So they're a great metal band. So check out Bewitcher if you haven't just yet. So that's what I've been listening to. And of course, you can find these songs from all these artists on the Spotify playlist by searching LR044. Or go to the aforementioned LostRhetoric.com, click on the episode, and the player will be there for you. Now let's get into the exhumed excerpt from the Tomb of the Promulgated. This week, the article that I'm exhuming, giving a little fresh air, is from early, mid-1967 from Florida. There's a story from Florida here that I'm gonna tell you. And it goes like this. At 11:30 p.m. on July 20th, 18-year-old Barbara Fawcett of Pompano Beach was driving to Isla Morada, where her mother was staying. Her small Ford was the only car on the highway at the time. Suddenly, a large yellow light showed in her rearview mirror, and before too long, she realized it was not a car, but something much less mundane. Barbara began to speed to get away from the thing. The object made a constant high-pitched roaring sound. It continued to overtake the car, swayed up a few feet as if to land on top of it, but at that moment, a car approached from the opposite direction, and the bright yellow glow coming from the object covered the road for a second and then completely disappeared. Man, it sounds like he was trying to kind of bring her aboard. After telling her mother the story and resting for 2 hours, Barbara decided to return to Pompano to avoid early morning rush traffic and convinced herself she had had an illusion. She and her sister and their toy poodle began the journey back north on US 1 and reached the Jewish Creek area at 2:30 a.m. The only other car on the road turned off at Ocean Reef and they were alone. Suddenly, the dog began to shake violently, but did not make a sound. Then the girls saw the yellow light again as it rose out of the swamp west of the road. This time, it did not look perfectly round as before, but somewhat jagged. It wobbled and floated up, down, and from side to side, Miss Fawcett said. When it appeared in front of the car and about 15 feet off the ground, Barbara thought she was going to collide with it, but as the car nearly reached the object, it veered to the right under the power lines. It landed on one of the large sand dunes to the right of the road. At this point, the light became smaller and smaller until it reached the size of a pinpoint and finally disappeared. Less than a minute later, the large light again appeared in the rear view mirror of the car. Barbara kept going as fast as her car would go and reached Pompano Beach. She later reported the incident to officers at Substation 4 in Homestead, the Air Force, and Homestead Police. Investigation showed an immense, scorched-like area on top of a particular sand dune near the edge of the road. So there you have it. This craft was fucking with her. That's two days in a row this thing was chasing her around, so... it wanted her, or it wanted something from her. So she's lucky. She's lucky she got away. And interesting that it rose from a swamp, you know, because we're going to be getting into some swamp issues here with some of the stories we're going to be telling. So, yeah, I hope you enjoyed that. And if you got any stories from Florida, I mean, there's plenty. It's fucking Florida, right? I mean, this is a Tuesday afternoon in Florida. I mean, there's this weird shit happening every second. So this is, I guess, par for the course. But if you have any crazy stories from Florida, write me. Let me know. I would love to hear if you're in the Pompano Beach area and have anything similar or have heard of anything similar. That'd be great. Write me. LostRhetoricPodcast@gmail.com. All right. Let's get into this episode. Let's get into this long-awaited discussion. I've been really looking forward to this one. So here's me and Eris. Eris.
Hey, man.
What's going on?
Not much.
You, it's a nice day. Yeah, I was going to ask, are you enjoying your nice, warm, sunny Saturday by sitting inside talking to me?
Yeah, I'm in my office, and my office is a pit right now because I took everything off the walls to like put it all back up again. So got bored and took it apart. So it's a pit. So yeah, I'm in the office upstairs. It's kind of hot. There's a fly flying around in here, and it's big and loud. And yeah, you know, whatever. It's awesome.
Yeah,
I'm excited to talk to you, man.
Well, I'm in a similar situation. I'm upstairs as well. Hot. It's always hot.
Right.
But I'm glad you're with me. So yeah, thank you for being here. With me tonight, Eris Hunter Wales, the man himself. You guys had an album release yesterday, Bewitcher, the band which you played drums in, released a fucking killer record. That I'm a fan of, called Cursed Be Thy Kingdom.
That's the one.
That's the one on Century Media Records.
Yeah, it's pretty exciting stuff, man. You know, like the whole big label thing, but like the thing that's hard to wrap my brain around is how much it's being spread across like the world. Like I have a list of countries that have like blogged about it or posted about it or done a review, and it's like the entire planet. Man, the whole planet's listening to me play drums. It's real weird.
Dude, it's fucking great. I'm proud of you. Me and the boy went on a long aimless drive yesterday out into the country and was just blasting it. There's a 2.5-year-old just roaming through the Oregon countryside listening to like satanic heavy metal.
Yeah,
I mean,
he's a drum guy. What did he think? What do you think of the drums?
Oh, dude. You
okay?
He didn't complain.
Okay.
I'll tell you that much. But yeah, dude, great record. Everyone listen to it. Yeah, man. I was stoked on it. That shit's like I hadn't heard you guys too much, but you guys are fucking metal, man.
It's awesome, dude. Like it's a little bit of a leap for the band because before it was pretty like stripped down, like Venom worship, you know, speed metal and stuff. But like we went a little bit more rock and roll. Like I wasn't on the first two records and I'm on this record, but yeah, so it's way different and it's but it's better. It's awesome. It's much more rich. The sound got rich.
Rich. It's richer because of you. And I believe it. When I was listening, I'll say it's because of you, because I know you. And when I was listening to this record, I was like, this fucking band is so Eris. Like that's what I was thinking. Like Order of the Gash, of course, one of my favorites.
Yes.
And your other amazing band, but I was like, that's like you through and through. But when I heard you on this Bewitcher record and heard like the content and the riffs and everything, it's like, this is so Eris. And it's like, I'm glad you, it seems like a perfect fit. So glad you found it.
It is super cool. And they're the other two dudes involved are rad dudes. So we're having a good time so far.
Well, good, man. It seems like it's an exciting time. Wish you guys could hit the road. I'm sure you're bummed a little bit about that, as is everyone else. But hey, you'll conquer the world live as soon as you can.
We'll get there. We'll get there.
We'll get there. You know, music is the topic tonight.
Yeah.
We are going to be talking about, it's kind of a a rock and roll metal theme.
Yeah, it's like it's a broad subject.
Yeah, you know, we wanted to discuss some songs that are based in real life. Like, they're either inspired by true events or they are a product of the artist's personal experiences and beliefs.
Right.
Which is, and looking into it, man, holy shit, there's way, I mean, we all know that there's whatever space rock and all sorts of like alien paranormal content in music in general.
Yeah.
But it was cool to dig into certain themes and where, yeah, like where the inspiration came from, you know,
and just barely scratching the surface.
Like, oh yeah.
Do several shows about this, you know?
Absolutely. So, and I might.
Yeah, I think the subjects we've chosen are, it's good. Like I said, it's broad, you know, smattering of music and styles, kind of. It's all pretty much rock and roll, I guess.
It's pretty much rock and roll. It's pretty much all rock and roll, heavy metal. Sticking with that Bewitcher theme, you know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure, man. It's the main vein of this whole day, this whole show.
Well, the first one that we wanted to tackle was Sammy Hagar.
Yeah, good old Sammy, man.
Now, Sammy, we all know from Van Halen mostly, but, you know, he's a solo artist and he's like everyone knows him as like the beachy, like tequila guy or whatever.
Yeah, he's kind of like, I'm drawing a blank here. Parrot Heads. Who
Jimmy Buffett.
Like? Yeah, he's kind of like Jimmy Buffett, but he's, you know, more rock and roll, I guess.
Well, yeah, he's like the rock and roll, slightly metal Jimmy Buffett.
Yeah. And he did Montrose. Montrose is cool.
Yeah, I've heard some Montrose songs. You know, and the song that kind of set us off and it's actually a killer song is Silver Lights.
Yeah, man. Like, once I started listening to it, I was like, I like this song.
It is a really good song.
Yeah, 1976 off his album 9 on a 10 scale, which I've never heard the whole record, but I want to now because the song's awesome.
Me too. Yeah, I've listened to it a few times in the last couple of days. I actually just listened to it probably 30 minutes ago. It really is a pretty killer track. But Sammy himself has some interesting thoughts about his life and what's happened to him, right?
Yeah, he's got some theories and he's got some beliefs and stuff. Let's see. I have all these notes about the song itself.
Yeah. Well, whatever.
Whatever. We can get into his weirdness.
Yeah.
If you want. He has a story about, it's not necessarily that he was abducted by aliens or anything like that, but in his experience, he claimed that they kind of like tapped into his brain. It's pretty interesting. I watched, I guess Kesha has some kind of like podcast or like YouTube show. Have you seen this?
I have not.
It's Kesha and the Creepies.
Okay.
He just interviews people and they talk about weird shit. So it's basically what you're doing, but it's Kesha. So it's a little sexier, I guess.
Yeah, that sounds way better.
It's pretty a little sexier. And she got pulled to get people like Sammy Hagar instead of like, you know, people like me. But so she's talking to him, and he basically breaks it down where he didn't really say how old he was. I think it was before he was like a big time rock star, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But he's old enough to party. So the way he put it was, there was like a mountain that was like 13 miles away from where he was. He was laying in bed, and he could visually see a spaceship on top of the mountain, like a flying saucer. And he could see it, but it wasn't real. There was like a wire from the spaceship to his brain.
Okay.
And he could see them and they could see him. And basically he felt like they were, what did he say? It was a download situation, or they uploaded something from my brain, like an experiment, is what he said.
Okay.
And he said that they gave him some kind of numerical code that he didn't understand. And then all of a sudden it was like, boom, it was gone. They disconnected and the whole thing, flash of light, and it was over, basically.
Right.
So I thought that was an interesting claim of an encounter, because it's not like they abducted me or they probed me or whatever. It's like,
right.
they were, I knew exactly where they were, and they were kind of like tuned into my head.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy. Did he ever figure out the code?
He like listed off a couple like random letters and numbers, and I was just like, oh, okay, whatever, man. Like, it was just something he didn't understand, I guess.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like, I don't know, man. Because, you know, with Stephen Greer, Dr. Stephen Greer, and like his CE5, The Close Encounters of the Fifth Kind, where you kind of go into a deep meditation and kind of hone into the alien's location and kind of pinpoint where you are, and you can contact them that way and they come and visit. Sounds like a similar situation where Hagar stepped into it unknowingly or something.
Yeah, possibly. And like I said before, when you asked me to do this, kind of, I'm like the eternal skeptic and like logical person.
Right.
So like, it's just like, oh, you're just dreaming. Like, you're up on that mountain, like partying with your boys. Cause that's what he said in the interview. Like, oh yeah, I knew the mountain well. Like, we used to like party up there and drink and have fun and stuff. It's like, okay, so you're like asleep and
yeah,
you're dreaming about partying, and maybe you like drop some acid up there one time and, you know, saw some weird shit, and now you're dreaming about it. Like, who knows, you know?
Right. Or, you know, he's just having a fucking crazy dream.
Yeah. And he also claimed to have an experience when he was 4 that he believed he saw a spaceship like in broad daylight hovering over a country field where his family lived.
Oh, okay. So he's lived his whole life with this.
He's had a couple things, but going back to the song, like, obviously it was kind of from his experience. Like, the song was inspired by his experiences, and it was an interesting trope, because it's kind of like the general theme seems to like indict Christianity and the worship of nature, like the sun and the moon, and like other societal hangups, like, you know, government, bureaucracy, and whatever. But it, like, in the song, it seems like there's some people that are like, like, all this earthly stuff, all these distractions are stupid. Like, I'm just going to get on a spaceship with these dudes, because like, they've got it figured out, and I'm out of here. Like, that's kind of what the song is. That's what I got from it. Like, this line here is what I really like. Now some cried when the sun eclipsed. Yeah, and some fought for the broken bits. While the rest flew off in rocket ships. So I'm pretty sure that he just, you know, like, he saw them as, you know, a higher being and like something more intelligent, that like he just didn't want to, you know, the humans could just wait one, and he's going to go jump on a rocket ship.
Right. Yeah. He's like, you can keep this place.
Yeah, totally. I'm done with all these, you know, worthless things. Like, these aliens, they got it figured out, man.
Yeah. I mean, that's like a common theme. It seems with folks who, I don't know, tend to have these experiences. But yeah, it's like they're either coming here to tell you what to do to help humanity.
Uh-huh.
Or they're going to take you away and take you to where you belong, kind of thing, you know?
Yeah. Or they're going to take you away and, you know, do experiments on you.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it doesn't seem like Hagar had a bad experience.
No, and there was another good quote from the interview. He said, I have my experiences, the things I feel and believe. I know there's dimensions, I know there's ghosts, and I know there's UFOs, but I don't know what it all means.
Right.
You know, so he just seems like he's just rolling with it, and he's not threatened by any of it. In another article I read, he was frightened by the, you know, the aliens tapping into his head or whatever,
mm-hmm.
but he still seems like he's, you know, not afraid of it. Like,
right.
Definitely afraid, you know?
Yeah. It seems like afraid,
more curious about it.
Yeah. It seems like he's embraced it. He's curious and maybe a little hopeful that it's a positive thing for him.
Yeah.
Or us or everyone. Who knows?
Yeah. Who knows? But, you know, he's like a silly party boy, and I don't know. It's Sammy Hagar. you wouldn't expect, like, the first time I heard that he believed he was abducted, and I read a couple articles about it, I was just like, really, Sammy? Like, you to drink too much tequila, man.
Yeah.
Like, just keep on partying, dude. You're cool. Don't worry about it. But
just party the aliens away, man.
Yeah, you know? Just... keep partying and the aliens will either join the party or they'll just take off. Maybe their parties are better. I don't know.
Well,
maybe, you know, that's why, because he wants to go to the alien parties.
Yeah, man. He wants to blast off and not just with cocaine, you know?
Yeah. They can drive faster than 55 on alien planets.
Oh, way, so, way faster.
Faster, dude. So he wants some of that.
He can get it.
Well, yeah, he could.
Yeah, man, Hagar's, you know what? I've gained more respect for Hagar throughout the years.
Yeah, his solo stuff's not bad. I can't get behind. There's a couple Van Hagar songs that are all right.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm more interested in his Montrose years, and some of his solo stuff is like, you know, it's not fantastic, but it's like iconic in a way.
Yeah.
You know, so.
He's not bad. From the stuff I've heard, not bad. And this song Silver Lights, I'll put it, I think this will be the first time I'm gonna put the songs in the episode, so I'll definitely,
oh, you're gonna play it,
yeah, at some point, either before what I'm saying right now or after, I don't know. I'll put a clip of the song in there so everyone can get, yeah, a taste. It's a killer,
it's cool,
track,
man. It's got a little bouncy kind of backbone, but it's a little dark and mysterious. There's, mm-hmm, that like smooth kind of soaring time change that kind of floats you out there for a second. It's got good rising sound in the last bit, you know, kind of makes you feel like you're getting on a rocket ship.
Cool. See, man, fucking nailed it.
You nailed it.
He nailed it.
Totally.
Well, shit. Is there anything else about Hagar you want to get out there before we move on?
That was kind of the good stuff, man. That was the stuff that kind of interested me a lot. He's very convincing in when he talks about it. Like it's he's passionate, you know.
Yeah.
It's not like a silly kind of like, you know, elbow, like, yeah, aliens, right?
Right.
I did this, I saw this, I believe this, and that's where I'm at, you know.
Yeah,
that's,
and I like that when people, these experiencers, talk like that, because it just seems more genuine. It's just like, right, yeah, of course, you know, there's no angle to it other than like I'm kind of reluctantly telling you this story, and I'm not really, yeah, going to embellish it, you know. I'm gonna write
shameless. They're shameless, yeah, about it.
I'm gonna write some, yeah, killer tunes about it, but you know,
as long as we get something,
you gotta document the most profound experiences in your life, and if you're a musician, they turn into songs.
Yeah, exactly.
Well,
are we going CCR next? Is that what we're doing next?
Yeah, let's get into CCR. So, yeah, we're gonna swap stories here. You know, I'll take the lead on this one. I did the research on this one. It's
yeah, we split the research.
Yeah.
Well,
the CCR song, It Came Out of the Sky, is the one we're going to get into, and it's off the 1969 album Willie and the Poor Boys. If you're a CCR fan, you know this song.
Yeah.
Standard
CCR song.
Standard. Yeah. Yeah. Standard. Definitely the standard vibe, you know?
Yeah.
But this This one's interesting because just based on the lyrics, it's inspired to me. It's inspired by two different events, and I've read two different theories where, you know, it's based on this one sighting, and this other person says it's based on this other sighting, but they don't say it's a mixing of both. So that's where I'm going. It's like this song, based on the lyrical content, to me, is he's telling the story, plucking facts from two different sightings, one being from Dexter, Michigan in 1966, and the other being in Moline, Illinois in 1967.
Okay, they're close together.
Close together, because there was a huge Midwest flap in the 60s. I did a whole episode with Kevin Spafford about the Michigan UFO craze in 1966. So I basically have a whole episode about half of what John Fogerty is talking about in this song. So nice. If you want the full story of some of the influence of this song, go back to episode 13. We did like almost 3 hours on it. But the sighting in Moline was something I had never really looked into. So, you know, the lyrics are, whoa, it came out of the sky, landed just a little south of Moline. Jody fell off his tractor, couldn't believe what he seen, right? So that right there, Moline is a very obvious reference to Moline. But the sighting in Moline was not by a farmer. It was by a cop mainly. And but
ride tractors in Moline?
There's definitely tractors. Well, Jody is a made up character, but the farmer bit comes from the Dexter, Michigan sighting in 1966, because even though it didn't happen, or the Frank Manor, the man who reported this sighting, lived on a farm. It was the Manor farm, but he was not a farmer. He was a truck driver.
Okay.
So I think John Fogerty took the Moline sighting, and then he got the inspiration of the farmer from the Frank Manor sighting in Dexter, Michigan. And there's another line in the song, and a scientist said it was marsh gas. That is a reference to J. Allen Hynek, who showed up on behalf of Project Blue Book, which is, you know, the Air Force's official UFO investigation
entity.
Yeah, I mean, J. Allen Hynek's all over. He's on every story I'm going to tell tonight, because he was everywhere. And he the official explanation of the Manor sighting and the subsequent sighting that happened the next day at Hillsdale College in Michigan. There were two major sightings in a couple days, both explained away as swamp gas. And
what were people seeing?
Well, this is interesting because Manor and his whole family, he had 10 fucking kids and his wife and a bunch of cops. There were sightings for days leading up to this Frank Manor sighting, right? But on his farm, there was a pyramid shaped object, is how he described it, above a little swamp on his property.
Okay.
And, you know, with blinking lights and everything.
Right.
And him and his son went down there and saw it and zipped away, you know. But, you know, all these cops showed up to sweep the area, and a lot of them had already had their own sightings, and some of them had sightings that night of something in the sky. So there are all these kind of like corroborating stories in the area.
Yeah.
But then J. Allen Hynek shows up and says, it's just swamp gas because there's a swamp there.
Are people inhaling the swamp gas and it's like creating hallucinations, or does the swamp gas like create an object like a mirage or whatever? Is that what he said is getting at?
In my my idea of it is it creates, yeah, almost like a mirage, like an illusion of like a shape and lights that people see, right, and they think it's an object floating. Like I said, the next day at Hillsdale College, there's 80 some odd people saw this object floating over what they called a swamp, but it was just an artificial lake on campus for three hours. And J. Allen Hynek showed up again and was like, it's just swamp gas. And
this guy is just a swamp gas expert then.
Well, yeah, but this is like the first instance that I've read of the swamp gas explanation, and it's kind of snowballed into like a joke, you know what I mean, after this. Yeah. And there's a lot of speculation that the Air Force put J. Allen Hynek up to it, and there's talks of like him going out and having some weird private conversation and then coming back and just definitively like, it's swamp gas, when before he was a little bit more skeptical.
Yeah,
and that people think
go ahead.
No, there's, yeah, he had like a conversation with the higher ups or something, and there's like,
yeah, he had to go to his boss and get the story straight,
right? And he claims that did not happen, right?
Of course.
So you know, and this pissed off the whole community because he's making them look dumb. He's like, you have dozens of witnesses throughout a few days saying that they've seen these objects in multiple places, and you're just telling us it's swamp gas. And like, Frank Manor he claims to have experience with actual swamp gas because he says he spent time on army maneuvers in the swamps of Louisiana during World War II. And he's like, I've seen plenty of swamp gas, and this wasn't it. He's like, he's like, we know what we saw. And then the main guy from the Hillsdale sighting, this guy named Van Horn, did his own kind of investigation into the swamp gas by testing the soil. And there's some scientific explanation of why he says it wasn't swamp gas. And he claims that J. Allen Hynek never even stepped foot onto the area where it landed. So he was just saying it was swamp gas when he didn't even do an investigation of the area. And he said the weather wasn't even conducive to it being swamp gas. So anyway.
So that was my next question. What creates swamp gas? Weather? Weather conditions like temperature or humidity?
Yeah, I guess.
Or it's, yeah, man.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know the exact explanation. I think I talked about what swamp gas is in the episode of episode 13, but my memory isn't what it used to be.
No.
I'm not exactly sure. There's some chemistry going on with the soil and the plants and the air that creates these colors and whatever. Illusions.
Right. Kind of like Aurora Borealis.
Yes. Perhaps. Of the swamp, I guess.
Aurora Borealis of the swamp.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
the sound is magical.
Yeah. So anyone who knows exactly how swamp gas is formed can shred us apart for not knowing exactly. But
that's
whatever. Funny. No one knows what it is, man.
Yeah.
No, I'm just kidding. But yeah, so that's how John Fogerty got the inspiration for, I think, the farmer character being basically, yeah, Frank Manor, who isn't actually a farmer. Mm-hmm. And you know, in the song, he kind of goes around talking about, you know, the scientists said it was marsh gas, and then Spiro Agnew came and made a speech, and everyone's trying to capitalize on this, like the government. He talks about raising the tax on Mars, and the Vatican once has an explanation. They said it's the Lord, and then Hollywood came in to make a movie, and Ronald Reagan says it's communist. You know what I mean?
Right.
And Jody, the character, gets like, he becomes a national hero, you know, and they're going to put him on TV, and But then Jody kind of outsmarts them all, and he's like, wants to sell it to him for $17 million because they all kind of want it. They're all trying to claim that they need it because for whatever, just to benefit themselves. And Jody's like, nah, I'll take $17 million for it. You know what I mean?
Right.
So in the end, you know, the farmer outsmarts basically all the opportunists of the world.
Yeah.
But you got to remember at this time in the late 60s, there was a huge fervor over this stuff. There were sightings all over the place, and the media played a big part in that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what happened in Moline in 1967, where this cop had a daytime sighting outside of his son's school, and his son even saw it, and like another cop saw it.
Yeah.
And apparently it was a pretty massive object, and there's film of it. This cop was carrying around a camera because there were so many sightings. Yeah,
like a super camera or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. Nice. And critics say that that's suspect because he's looking for something, and he claimed to like science fiction. So they kind of basically say he's predisposed to this like idea, like he's looking to the skies for something, but he claims like, yeah, I'm looking to the skies because everyone was seeing shit.
Yeah.
So
yeah. Interesting.
And I saw the film. I'll post it. It's, you know, not much, but it looks like a white kind of egg shaped thing floating around in the sky in broad daylight. And one of the cops says that he would estimate the size to be 2,500 to 3,000 feet in height.
That's pretty big.
That's fucking huge. That's ridiculous.
That's super huge.
Yeah. And he says that there was a white ray emitting from it that looked kind of like a sun ray.
Uh-huh.
That's not what the main witness, this guy, Bill Fisher, he didn't say anything about that. He's the guy who he saw it. He filmed it. And
yeah,
they don't think he's a credible witness because he likes this kind of stuff,
right?
But yeah, the sighting in Moline got explained away by the Air Force in a very interesting manner. They say it is most likely attributable to a couple of large balloons with lights constructed out of plastic laundry bags. Yeah, and it says in their opinion, that it was most likely a plastic clothing bag.
The one that was supposedly 2,500 feet. That one?
Yeah, just massive. Yeah, like this massive craft. And that's, you know,
a lot of laundry, man. Serious,
it's
laundry.
Like God's laundry, man.
So was Fogarty and the Credence guys like into this stuff, or it was just kind of like a fun subject matter to tap into? Did you come across any interviews of them expressing interest?
I could not find anything of Fogarty talking about the inspiration behind the song. Yeah. But there was such kind of like national hysteria about these sightings that, you know, Credence wrote a fucking song about it.
Yeah, so everybody's interested in it, and let's sell some records, man.
Yeah, it was just part of the national conversation at the time, because I'm telling you, I mean, in the late 60s, mid-late 60s, there were so many sightings everywhere, especially in the Midwest. But, you know, and like, you know, the investigators claim the hysteria is causing these sightings, and to not worry about them because these people are just worked up.
Yeah. Do you think it's like isolation, like country loneliness? Like they're trying to like create something, so create some kind of fervor, you know, and get their town on the map or whatever. Like,
I don't know, man. I mean, some of the reporters might approach it that way, but the people were having the actual sightings, and a lot of them, I'm telling you, a lot of them are fucking cops, man. So what the hell, yeah. why would cops, I talked about this in the episode, it's like they're supposed to be keeping people calm. That's what they're supposed to be doing. They're not supposed to be going out there yelling that they saw UFOs and causing a panic. But
right,
so many cops in Moline and in Dexter, Michigan, in that area, they were all saying they saw shit.
Hmm.
So that lends to the validity of the sightings in a way. It's like you got these people who are in a position of, I don't know, authority, and yeah, they're in the same camp as the farmer who saw the fucking UFO, you know?
Yeah, they're less likely to bullshit because, you know, they have a reputable job and part of the community. I mean, in theory.
In theory, yeah. They have more to lose.
Right.
Than just, you know, Frank Manor, the truck driver on the farm, you know? It's like they're supposed to be sensible people.
Yeah.
You know? But Fogarty talks about all of this in the lyrics of the song about, you know, he calls out the government, he calls out the Vatican, he's calling out newspaper people for just like wanting to capitalize off of it.
Yeah.
You know, right. So everyone's trying to dip their hands in this thing, you know, but poor old Jody's like, I saw some shit. You know what I mean?
Right. What does Jody want out of it? Just recognition or like validation?
He wants money now that everyone's all over him.
Everybody wants it, right?
But you know, yeah, that's the whole thing. It's like he saw this thing and he ran into town screaming it came out of the sky, you know?
Right. Yeah.
So yeah. Another great lyric from this song that is a nice kind of segue into what I'm going to talk about at the end of the show is there's a line that Fogarty says that is White House said, put the thing in the blue room.
Hmm.
And
huh.
We'll get something to it. We'll get to it later, but
I'm interested in the blue room.
The blue room will come up.
Okay. So these songs are tying together. Is that what you're telling me?
Yeah. The two that I researched actually there's some common ground here.
There you go.
And I didn't know that until I started looking into this stuff. And that's the shit I love about whatever. It's just, you know, but that's also, there's a fervor. These things are all,
yeah,
they all go back to one place, it seems. And yeah, we'll get to it.
And everything connects.
Yeah, man. And, you know, so that's what I got on what I think is the inspiration of it came out of the sky.
Seems right. Seems right.
But you know what else is cool? You've seen Creepshow, right?
Yeah.
And you remember
The
Stephen King.
Yeah.
He plays the dumb farmer.
Yeah, who touches the meteor and then starts growing all kinds of green shit. Yeah.
Yeah, and he has like these visions of like selling the meteor to the Department of Meteors, and he's hoping to get a bunch of money, and it's kind of and his name is Jordy. And not Jody, but Jordy Verrill. The section, that little vignette's called The Lonesome Death of Jordy Verrill.
Right.
So it seems pretty obvious that Stephen King was inspired by the Creedence song to write this short story called Weeds that became the little section, little part of Creepshow.
Yeah, I like that one. It's silly as hell, but...
Yeah.
King can be silly.
Yeah.
At least on screen,
yeah. But so it's just like real events inspired the song, and then the song inspired Stephen King, you know, and it's like this, whatever, it just keeps growing, and it's fascinating. It all started on a fucking farm in Michigan and a small town in Illinois, you know?
Yeah, in the late 60s. Who'd have thunk it?
What a time to be alive.
Oh, man. All right.
Well, let's get into the next bit here. This is an interesting fella.
The spaceman, dude. Ace Frehley. Yeah, it's the spaceman.
He is the spaceman. I mean, and honestly, dude, like, I'm not a big Kiss fan. I constantly refer to them as the most overrated band of all time.
Really?
Yeah. But, you know, I like some of their stuff. I like 80s no face paint.
Oh yeah, the kiss. No makeup kiss rules, man. Lick it up, man. Hot in the Shade, like that album is awesome.
Tends to be my more favorite version, but you know, I claim to not like them very much. I have to admit, I haven't dug deep into their catalogs, you know, because I just like I'm not.
Then you don't know what you're talking.
I know what I've heard. I know what I've heard, and it just didn't grab me.
Oh, they're like I wouldn't necessarily call them overrated because they're not. There's nothing to overrate. There's not a ton of content there, musically or otherwise. I mean, it's just party music, man. It's kind of similar to Van Halen. You know, Van Halen is just, it's just a party. Like Kiss is just a party.
Right. Well, they were a spectacle and a live event, you know, like Kiss shows. If I would have grown up in that era, I would have gone to a fucking Kiss show, whether I liked them or not.
Yeah, exactly. And I've seen Kiss twice, and both times, like, it wasn't great, but it was too much fun to not be great. If that makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, like, you'll see the old dudes play. And like they used to be legends, and they're either going to be like really great and you're amazed, or they're going to be like kind of shitty, but it's still great. And that's definitely what it is. But you know, whatever. Ace Frehley was a spaceman. You got the Demon and the Catman, the Star Child, and he was the spaceman.
Mm-hmm.
He actually claimed to be from another planet called Jendel. I believe is how you pronounce it.
Jendel.
I honestly like. I've seen a lot of interviews where he talks about it. Never gives any details. Never kind of says where in the galaxy Jendel is located.
Mm-hmm.
Like that. No details about the planet itself. Like, are there a bunch of like Kabuki style like rockers on Jendel? Like, is it kind of like Krypton, where everybody is basically Superman? So is like everybody Ace Frehley on Jendel? Like, that'd be kind of cool. Like, I'd go there.
The planet of Ace Frehley's, man.
Yeah, like a bunch of like cool guitar players, man. Like, let's go.
It's just like no drummers.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't. Maybe there are drummers on Jendel, but I'm not really sure. In reading about it a little bit, like some people were just kind of like during the time it was. They were such larger than life characters. So they were trying to like provide like a backstory to them. Like, oh, he's the spaceman. So he's from another planet. And just go with it, Ace. If you're getting interviewed, just tell him, yeah, I'm from Jendel, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And there was other things like, you know, Gene Simmons was hatched from a dinosaur egg. Like, he was the demon that came from a dinosaur egg. Just silly, like promotional crap like that, you know.
Right. But Ace believes it, right?
He does. He actually does. And he claims to have had some like sightings and stuff himself. He said that his first UFO sighting of a cigar shaped something, quote, something from a plane while he was on tour with Kiss at some point.
Yeah.
And then he also said that he had had multiple sightings from his backyard in Westchester, New York.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, he was much like Sammy Hagar, where like kind of throughout his life, he had a few instances where he felt like he made some kind of contact with, you know, aliens, I guess.
Right.
But, you know, typical sighting things, you know, impossible maneuvers and speeds and all that kind of stuff that he would see.
Right.
He also claims that he believes one landed on his property and knocked him unconscious at one point. And I think this is like either during or after Kiss, you know, that all this kind of stuff was really happening. Here's a quote. He said, "All I know is I woke up the next morning and I'm laying in my doorway, halfway in the house and halfway out of the house. And then there was like this circular burn on the grass." And he didn't say he didn't want to tell anybody because he didn't want anybody else on his property like examining it or anything like that. And to me, I mean, it's Ace Frehley was like a notorious maniacal drunk. Like, there are like interviews, old like Kiss interviews, where he is just obliterated and like Gene and Paul like rolling their eyes, like, God, this guy, like, why do we have to kick this drunk guy with us all the time, you know? Mm-hmm. So to me, that just sounds like a drunk move, man. Like,
yeah,
pass on your door, Ace, man. Like, and you were, I don't know, you're out standing on your lawn trying to light a cigarette and you dropped it and created a little burn mark. I don't know.
Right.
It just seems like some drunken stuff, but he totally believes it, you know? But he also, this is the other thing that kind of connects him and Sammy Hagar. He also kind of believes that aliens or some other like higher beings tap into his brain.
Mm-hmm.
He said another quote, "Sometimes I write songs and I don't know where they're coming from. It's almost like they are being beamed into my head. I've had nights where I can't write the lyrics down as fast as I get them. And it's like, I'm not writing them and somebody else is giving them to me."
Mm-hmm. Which,
to me, like, again, the eternal skeptic over here, it's like, dude, can't you just be an inspired and talented individual? Like, does it have to come from some other higher being? Like, can't it just come from you?
Right. Yeah. I mean, that just sounds like normal songwriting to me.
Yeah, exactly. Like, but if you're really inspired, it's going to run out of you.
Right. But, you know, whatever he needs to inspire himself to keep going, if that's the narrative, whether he's bullshitting or if it's something he actually believes, keep it up, you know.
But that whole thing could kind of play into his, like, I'm from Jendel narrative too, because he also believes that, like, aliens crossbred with Homo sapiens.
Mm-hmm.
And like, here's another quote. I got some good quotes from this article. It was really good. He said, "Listen, Homo sapiens have been around for about 300,000 years, but in the last 5,000 years, our brain capacity has tripled. And there's no explanation for that biologically. The only logical explanation I can come up with is that we mated with aliens and our DNA mixed with theirs and gave us that much more intelligence."
Mm-hmm.
And then he followed it up with, like, I mean, how do you think pyramids came to be? And he also explained, like, a lot of these ancient civilizations that were on, like, different parts of the planet, one thing that they have in common is pyramids.
Mm-hmm.
So how are all these people that hadn't even crossed any of these oceans building pyramids, you know?
Right.
When they're not even communicating with each other. So
right. He's got a point.
It was a really good point. And when I read that, I was like, Ace Frehley has had a moment.
Yeah. Well,
who would have thought he would be smart about something? But,
well, you know, yeah, I've heard the theory that if it's not just, you know, like hybrid breeding programs, it's alien species helping the human race advance to help us kind of like save ourselves. It's like this technological and scientific boom, which has seemed to hurt us more than it's helped us. But where does that advancement come from? You know, it's like,
so
we spent centuries doing nothing, and then all of a sudden we're like,
boom,
whatever.
Yeah,
there's the internet, man. You know, like, what's that?
Yeah. So that kind of circles back to the song of Ace Frehley's that I focused on for this. So when he was in Kiss, like, basically Kiss wanted to be the Beatles. So on all their records, well, most of the early ones, when it was the original lineup, it you know, Gene Simmons and Paul Stanley had songs on the record, and then Peter Criss and Ace Frehley also had songs on the record as well. So, like, the Beatles always had, like, everybody had their own songs on the record because they were all songwriters. So they wanted to do the same thing. And the Ace songs were never really, songs were always about women and just being a hooligan and whatever. And he usually got maybe like 2-3 songs per record. Peter Criss only got one song per record because his songs always sucked. Well, they didn't suck. They weren't like great. But he never really got into the alien stuff until his solo career, and like Frehley's Comet and all that kind of stuff. And he really dove into, like, even though he wasn't doing the makeup anymore and being the spaceman, he like really dove into the idea of space and aliens and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
And in 2014, he released a solo album called Space Invader, and the title track was about basically contrary to, well, I guess it's not really contrary because we're just kind of talking about this. The song's theme is about like a space invader that is more a heroic and godlike figure that kind of come to Earth to be like, hey, you guys are fucking up and let me help you out here, you know, let me lend you a hand,
right?
So yeah, like here's a couple lines from the song. He comes to save us from light years away. Our space invader knows we've lost our way. Destined for greatness, our race will survive. Behind his majesty, we'll be united and know the meaning of life. So it's kind of like looking to the skies for all the answers, you know, and space invader comes down and it's like, I got this all figured out.
Yeah, here's what you need to do.
Yeah, totally.
And Ace is like, dude, just take me with you.
Yeah.
I don't care. Get me out of here.
Yeah. Just take me. Can you drop me off at Jendel but before we get to your planet?
Man, yeah. I got some people to see.
I got some people I got to see.
But at least he's kind enough to help spread the message through his songs for the rest of us that are going to be stuck here.
Totally. Exactly, man. He's just doing us a favor. Superman didn't have to, you know, help anybody, but he could. So
that's true. Yeah. You know? And you know, if this is the song I'm thinking about, because he's got multiple songs.
I just focused on this one because I was interested in like the heroic, like godlike alien being
right,
you know,
and it's
coming down.
It's a good song, and if it's the one I'm thinking of, because there's a couple that I was listening to, I think it's this one. It's pretty heavy, man.
I don't know. This one wasn't, I didn't really like this song to me. It was like your standard, like old man rock song. Like it's only for massive fans who are blind to mediocrity, basically.
Oh, okay. No. I'm thinking that song Outer Space.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I didn't listen to that one. This is Space Invader from 2014. So you're
right. That one's a little more, like classic.
Okay.
Ish sounding like the outer space one was like heavy, like I don't like the guitar tone was way heavier than I was expecting, and it's like that Geezer Butler song Area Code 51, where it's like kind of talking about Area 51. That song, when I put it, it was like had that same heaviness to it. I was like, whoa, Geezer Butler was, you know, like in the late 90s early aught years when like nu metal was a thing. All these like old musicians were coming out with these like heavier, slower kind of records for some reason.
Yeah.
And I was like, whoa, Ace Frehley's like got some crushing riffs. And I had no idea. But anyway, that's not the song we're talking about. But I just wanted to throw out my surprise Ace Frehley's tone.
I mean, his like solo record when he still was in Kiss, when they each did their own solo record, his sold the most. So like his record was pretty good, or is pretty good. I don't know. He was always talented, but like Gene and Paul kind of took over mostly.
Right. Well, Ace Frehley's record number one on Jendel, which Kiss never achieved.
No, never. They didn't even touch the charts on Jendel. Are you kidding me?
Can't get those Jendelian charts are hard to crack.
So yeah, who knows if he had the same kind of idea that Sammy Hagar, like a curiosity, some theories and beliefs that just kind of inspired his music. But he could just be a drunk maniac.
No, that's the thing. It's like, yeah, it's either he's tapped into some shit, or he is just completely hammered all the time and is believing his own bullshit.
I think he's a sober dude now. So, and I actually, but I did meet Ace Frehley once.
I was going to ask about that. Yeah. What's the story behind meeting Ace?
So he did a show at the Aladdin here in town. And it was just, it was Ace Frehley. It was a solo show. And it was kind of like, if you go see the Scorpions play, they're not going to play anything rad from their like 70s era, like the good stuff.
Right.
And same thing with Kiss. Like they'll play a few things from the 70s or you know, like the big hits that you expect to hear, you know, Party All Night or whatever it's called. All the good stuff.
Right.
He played like more of the deep cuts, obviously like his songs, and it was super good. And my buddy that I went to the show with had interviewed him a couple weeks before. He actually flew out to New York and hung out with him all day. And he's a massive Kiss fan, and he took his Kiss pajamas when he was a kid and had Ace sign them. And he's got Gene's autograph, Paul's autograph, and Ace's autograph on his Kiss pajamas.
Whoa.
But he doesn't have Peter Criss's yet.
Yet. Yeah, man, that's epic.
But yeah, so he like hooked up with his publicist or whatever and management and got us to get into like the meet and greet line after the show was over. And it was basically just like you climb on the bus and you get a picture with Ace and he signs something, you bring in there and get off. And that was it. You know? So we both got up there and Mark was just like, "Hey, Ace, let's go. We talked. Yeah. Oh, hey, man." He recognized him, you know, he got the picture and that was it. And I was like, "Hey, Ace, cool, man." Shook his hand, sat next to him, got a picture. He didn't say a word to me. He said nothing. It was just like the most like bored, like, "All right, let's get these guys out of here," kind of thing.
Oh no.
Which was a bummer because, like, you know, it's Ace Frehley, man.
I know. Yeah. Sometimes it's like it's hard to meet your hero sometimes, you know?
It is. I mean, like, I actually, Mark facilitated a meet with Paul Stanley. So I met Paul Stanley too. And he was a little bit more fun than Ace Frehley was. So I met the better half of Kiss.
The better half, man.
Better half. Like, Peter Criss, I mean, whatever. He was a crazy drunk too.
And yeah.
Then, like, Gene Simmons, I wouldn't. I don't think I need to meet Gene Simmons.
I don't want to meet Gene either.
Yeah. Just, whatever.
Fuck Gene Simmons.
Paul Stanley's songs are better than Gene's songs, so I like Paul Stanley.
Paul seems like a nice guy.
Yeah, he was pretty cool. He was pretty cool. Didn't look like much of a plastic surgery disaster, which you would imagine, but you know, he was fine. He was fine. But yeah, one of the other things, circling back to Ace's beliefs, he said that people who don't believe in extraterrestrials are, quote, idiots, considering the vastness of the universe, which I can totally get behind.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm an eternal skeptic and I see it believe it when I see it kind of guy.
Right.
But yeah. And like, if all them stars are supposed to be suns with planets around them, like, come on, there's something out there. You would have to be an idiot not to believe.
Right. But,
who's to say that this advanced civilization would want to have anything to do with us, helping us or otherwise,
mm-hmm.
like possibly learn from us if they could travel across space?
Right. There's so many theories as to why they would even show up, you know?
Right.
It's curiosity, or they're checking up on us because they have created us, or you know what I mean? It's like
they planted the seeds of our civilization and technology. So they want to see what we've done with it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Have we done anything good with it?
They're just checking up on their little experiment and making sure it doesn't go wrong. You know, it's like a plant. They come and like, They walk into the greenhouse. The plant looks a little dry, so they give it a little water.
They check on the petri dish every once in a while. Yeah, it's all right.
It's all right. But you know, then there's conduits like Ace.
Yeah, man, who's giving us the goods.
Tapped the fuck in. But he also, just a quick aside, he claims to have been punched in the face by a ghost.
Oh yeah, I kind of glazed over that because that's drunken idiocy too, man. It was like he was like pulling a suitcase down or something like that, and like the lid popped open to the suitcase, and the the right. blow was like way stronger than the lid should have been and all this. It was just like, come on. And his like kids were watching on the security camera. Stuff. I was just like, what are you talking about, man? Like, come on. Like, I believe way more that you're from some imaginary planet than like a ghost punched you in the face.
Right. Yeah. He seems like he likes to speculate. He likes to go to the extreme.
His explanations are never like, you know, they don't have both feet on the ground, basically.
No, but Ace is Ace.
He is Ace. He is definitely Ace.
That's just who he is, man. If he believes it, he's not hurting anybody.
No. He's got a naturalistic guitar playing style. So like if aliens are feeding that to him, like, you know, keep on eating, man.
Yeah, man. Hey, people have a divine inspiration and an alien called God.
Yeah.
Constantly. And they claim God or Jesus Christ. They couldn't do shit without him. Yeah. So Ace saying he's got some Jendel aliens feeding them some stuff in inspiration. Yeah. There's no difference.
What's the difference?
So we still don't know what planet God lives on, you know?
No. That's could be Jendelian too, you know?
Could be. I mean,
Ace is like a Jesus figure. Is he like the son of God?
We all are.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, man, let's get into the last song.
I'm excited about this one, actually. I'm excited to hear what you got.
Well, this just, you know, like I had mentioned in the CCR lyric, just to, you know, like, this isn't a desultory conversation tonight. There's tie-ins. These things are connected. So yeah. CCR mentioned, or Fogarty mentioned, you know, White House said, put the thing in the blue room, you know?
Yeah.
And the blue room is, I can't say it's real, can't say it's not real. None of this has ever been proven, but it's apparently a room within Hangar 18, which is an infamous hangar on Wright-Patterson Air Force Base in Dayton, Ohio, that is claimed to house many things, alien technology, spacecrafts, possibly a living alien, cadavers. There's possible experimentation going on and alien autopsies and all sorts of shit happening in Hangar 18 on Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. And the song Hangar 18 by Megadeth from the album Rust in Peace from 1990 is what I'm going to talk about.
Yes.
So first off, the cover of this record, pretty amazing. It's got like a cryogenically frozen alien.
Yeah.
With a bunch of official looking
there's like
government generals
officials in suits and stuff.
Yeah, like in a hangar, in a big hangar.
Yeah.
And I always forget the name of, like, does Megadeth's like character, that skeleton guy, have a name? Do you know?
Rattlehead.
Rattlehead.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's like hovering over the alien.
Yeah.
There. Although the album is not specifically about this, like, it's not a UFO alien ET themed record.
No.
They have moments and the cover, of course.
Yeah.
But the drummer wrote the lyrics, from what I think it was the drummer. And, you know, Mustaine wrote the music. But, you know, honestly, dude, I'm not a huge Megadeth guy, mainly because I don't really like Mustaine's voice.
This Rust in Peace is the only Megadeth record I like, and I really get so much shit from people, like, the records before, like Peace Sells, but who's buying? Like, that record's fine, but just Rust in Peace just rips. Like, Marty Friedman and Dave Mustaine on the same record, dude. Ugh, it's just it's so good. And like, I don't know. That's my Megadeth soapbox moment. That's it. It's the only record they have, in my opinion.
Well, I haven't listened to the whole record, so I'm not going to talk about it. But this song in particular is actually pretty good. I still don't necessarily like Mustaine's vocals, but the music's fucking great.
He's got a weird voice.
But, you know, the lyrics are actually, I mean, there's not much there. Like it's
there really isn't. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he kind of blasts through the lyrics and it's almost three quarters instrumental track, you know?
Yeah.
But you know, it's like lyrics, like impossible to break these walls for you. You see the steel is much too strong, computer banks to rule the world, instruments to sight the stars. And then, you know, the chorus, like possibly I've seen too much, Hangar 18. I know too much.
Right.
Foreign life forms, inventory, suspended state of cryogenics, you know, stuff like that. And, you know, the I think this is a pretty famous, whatever lyric, the military intelligence, two words combined that can't make sense.
I love that part. And I do. I like how he says possibly in that song. Possibly. he says it a lot, which is hilarious. I always laugh about it.
Man, and the video is excellent.
Video's cool.
I'll post a link to it, but it's, you know, they're playing in a big hangar, airplane hangar, and there are these, you know, scientists running around conducting experiments on these alien life forms, and one of them is like really fucking cute.
Yeah,
like
totally
tiny, cute looking thing. But yeah, there's all sorts of, they're all manner of creature in there, and you know, the band ends up like cryogenically frozen and like wheeled out, I think. Whatever, just some government cover-up stuff. That's what they're all about. At the top of the video and at the end of the video, they specifically reference Roswell, the infamous Roswell crash of
1947, right?
And that there's so much more going on at Wright-Patterson than just Roswell, but it is rumored that after the crash of Roswell, there's rumors of four or five alien beings that were recovered, and there's two different versions. It's like they were all dead, and then there's a version where one lived. But regardless, the craft, the beans, any evidence was taken to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. Back then in 1947, it was known as Wright Field. And then they say that one of the bodies was taken to the Air Force's mortuary service at Lowry Field in Denver. And Denver has got its own fucking weirdness going on that we're not talking about tonight. But so this seems to be Megadeth's focus, is the Roswell aliens and the Roswell crashed UFO, and anything else that went along with it went to Wright-Patterson to Hangar 18.
Yes. Government cover up type stuff.
Total government cover up stuff. And also huge thing about Wright-Patterson, that is where Project Blue Book, where the aforementioned J. Allen Hynek, he worked at Project Blue Book, that's where they were based, at Wright-Patterson.
Okay.
So, you know, the government's official agency, basically, that looks into UFO crashes and anything having to do with alien and UFO phenomena to try to get to the bottom of it. It's yeah. based at Wright-Patterson.
X-Files, man. It's the X-Files. Yeah.
Yeah, and it started as Project Sign, turned into Project Grudge, then it turned into Project Blue Book.
Uh-huh.
And then it dissipated, and I think it was officially done by early 1970. They just kind of
stopped giving it money.
Yeah, I think they just tried to, you know, say, this isn't a national security threat. There's not really much to it, blah blah blah. Yeah. It seemed like they were trying to be a little more secretive about it and less in the open. So anyway, all this stuff is the HQ, the epicenter is Wright-Patterson in Dayton, Ohio.
Interesting.
Yeah. So this blue room, I don't know shit about it other than it's like it seems to be the main holding area within the hangar.
Mm-hmm.
Of, you know, flying saucer debris, the ET remains. And like I said, there's a rumor that there was an actual captured live alien that was there as late as like 1986, I think.
Yeah.
Like our stories came out that there was a live alien as like late as that.
So was he just chilling there? Like they got a like nice like fold out bed for him and stuff and some cable TV.
I guess they say that he was well treated as a guest. Mm-hmm. And then in this little blurb, it says it became known to many investigators that the extraterrestrial being's favorite flavor of ice cream was strawberry. So
fuck these aliens, man. You know, it's chocolate's way better than strawberry.
I'm a strawberry guy, so I'm with this alien.
Are you?
Oh, yeah.
See? No wonder. See, that's why I'm a skeptic. Because I like chocolate.
Oh, man. It's not just all chocolate and strawberry, Eris. But
that's true. There's some vanilla in there. And
there's a whole bunch of stuff.
I know.
But yeah, you know, so with this Roswell incident, there's multiple people who worked within the airport or Air Force pilots. One was Oliver Henderson, said that he flew a plane loaded with debris along with several small alien bodies from Roswell to Wright Field. And another guy, Marion Magruder, whose nickname was Black Mac.
Nice.
His kids claimed to have seen a living alien at Wright Field in 1947 and told them that it was, quote, it was a shameful thing that the military destroyed this creature by conducting tests on it.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. And another thing, Barry, you remember Barry Goldwater? I mean, not that we were alive, but you know, Barry Goldwater, the politician from Arizona.
Yeah. Name's familiar.
He was way into this shit.
Yeah.
And it's pretty well documented that he tried to gain access to the blue room, and he had a good friend, General Curtis LeMay, and he asked to like gain access. And he basically told him to like fuck off because, you know, whatever, they're good friends. But he was like, also told him like he should never ask about that again. You know, so like within that conversation between like a fucking United States senator and I'm assuming a high ranking general in the Air Force.
Yeah. He threatened him basically.
Yeah. Like, no, you can't see it. And I never want to talk about it. Like, that's pretty sketchy. Right.
Right. Yeah. It's a little scary. It's a little
weird.
Possibly he knows too much.
Possibly. Yeah. Well, he didn't want to have to take Goldwater out, you know, because if you know too much, you get frozen and.
Yeah. Cryogenics.
Taken out.
Yeah.
So there was another incident that, you know, I did an episode about the Kecksburg, Pennsylvania UFO in 1965. And Wright-Patterson came up then because there's this like weird acorn-shaped craft that kind of looked like it guided itself down into the woods of Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
And the whole fucking town saw it. Everyone saw it. You know, all these people went up to it and whatever. And then the military came in and just took over the town. And they took it out on a truck, and the whole town saw it leave. Like everyone's like everyone's watching this story unfold right before their very eyes. And the rumor was, well, first off, after it all happened, the Air Force was like, it wasn't a craft. It wasn't what you say it was. It wasn't anything really. It was like a meteor, meteorite or something. And everyone's like, nah, dude, like we all saw it. Right.
Right.
So they just kind of explained it away. But there was a truck driver named Myron who came out later in his life about with this story that that craft and possibly an alien body along with it, because there was a tiny box that was on the truck as well that people speculate may have had a body in it.
How big is this box we're talking about? Is it like
it's pretty big? Like, I mean, I don't know, I don't have the notes on the exact height, but I don't know. I'm not even going to speculate, but it fit on a flatbed truck, like an army truck.
Yeah.
And it wasn't going to hit any bridges, like overpasses. You know what I mean? Like it was,
yeah.
It was tall. It was acorn shaped, tall, kind of bell shaped craft. So this gets taken away, and this guy Myron claims that he saw it there along with a small body on a gurney that had three digits in lizard-like skin. He said it had a dark green or brownish skin. It was about 80 pounds. And
like a little green toddler.
Right. And he said that they were enclosing it with brick. Like they were basically entombing it to hide it in plain sight on the base.
Weird.
And he witnessed this, and he says that he got like kind of threatened.
Yeah.
And that's why he didn't say anything about it until he's like dying of heart disease, basically. And he's just like, ah, fuck it. You know, yeah. I got nothing to lose. I'm going to tell you what I saw. But then another driver from the same company says that he saw the object on a flatbed truck there under a tarp too.
Yeah. The same object or a different one?
Same object.
Yeah.
So that's not Hangar 18. I mean, he didn't say what building it was necessarily, but he was within the confines of Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. He claims to have seen them enclosing this craft behind a brand new wall.
Interesting. A lot of the same things kind of circle around this Wright-Patterson Hangar 18.
Right. And to top all this off, the Air Force claims that Hangar 18 doesn't even actually exist. There's a building 18, but there's no such thing as Hangar 18.
What classifies a hangar? Like just high ceilings so you can fit a plane in there?
Well, I mean, every hangar I've ever seen is kind of that, like, metal, kind of aluminum or tin, half like dome shaped, wide enough to drive in airplanes and accommodate their wingspan and stuff.
Yeah, totally.
So yeah, man, I saw a picture. I saw a picture of a building on Wright-Patterson that has the number 18 on it.
Yeah.
And it's not exactly like I explained. It seemed just more like a big brick or cylinder or a cylinder, like a cinder block style, big, long rectangle style building with large doors. And I guess that's supposed to be the supposed infamous Hangar 18 So yeah, that's what Megadeth is talking about here.
Interesting. So is there any significance to the number 18 at all, or did you see anything about that?
No, just that it's the number of the building.
Yeah. Huh.
Yeah, that's all I can really glean from that, you know. And there was a movie called Hangar 18 from 1980.
Really?
Yeah, which I have never seen. I'm going to try to look up the trailer and post it. But yeah,
let me see.
That just lends to the whole I kind of legend of it all, you know what I mean?
Well, it seems pretty legendary because a lot of things are, from the way you sound, like pretty connected to this place, like a lot of different stories, you know?
Well, yeah. And just based on, all right, let's say they're trucking in shit from Roswell and they're trucking in stuff from Kecksburg. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And Project Blue Book is based out of there. It seems like a high probability that a place like this, a facility like this would exist, and they would want to keep it under wraps. Because if they're bringing everything there to be examined and studied and like reverse engineered, like this is ground zero, man. This is where it all goes down.
Yeah.
Like
So, and of course, Dave Mustaine would be interested in that, or the drummer would be interested in that.
Yeah. So, you know, Megadeth.
I don't know if David Sanders is interested in anymore since he's born again, but.
Well, man, you know, hey, like I said, God the alien.
Exactly, God the alien. So he still believes in aliens, just some out of a book, I guess.
It's a different kind, you know.
Yeah. Him and Dave Ellison, man, the bass player from that era. He's Pastor Dave. Like, he's an ordained like youth pastor.
No shit.
Yeah. So well, they're way into the alien god.
A lot of those old rockers and metalheads that had, like, you know, drug and substance abuse issues seem to go back to their roots, their childhood roots.
Yeah. Or just they get into the 12-step program and
God true. Is
part of that. And, like, I guess, I mean, I've never been to one, but I've always heard that, like,
sorry, you cut out. What did you say?
I said in those 12-step programs, they say that your God can be anything. It doesn't have to be like the religious idea of God. So like your God could be a ham sandwich.
Oh, right.
But you know, those guys went the actual God route to get off the smack.
Right. Which, hey, yeah, if it saves your life.
Yeah.
And you're not a dick about it. You know, that's the thing. It's like, if you're not a dick about anything, more power to you.
I met Dave Ellison once, and he's definitely not a dick. I shook Dave Mustaine's hand, and he was a dick. He was doing a book signing, and I was there with a couple buds that were buying books and getting them signed. And I was too broke to buy a book, but I was just in line with them. I was like, I want to see Dave Mustaine.
Mm-hmm.
So they got up there, they're getting their book signed. I was like, hey Dave, I didn't buy a book, but I want to shake your hand. He looked at me like I was the biggest piece of shit and didn't say anything.
Oh man.
I was like, again, man, I got snubbed by another rock star.
Never,
man.
Meet
like,
your Dave heroes,
didn't
man.
Say anything to me. Dave Mustaine didn't say anything to me.
Well, Elephant was what are you gonna do when Bewitcher's opening up for Megadeth, you know?
Well, I don't think he's their A&R guy anymore, but our A&R guy used to be Megadeth's A&R guy.
See, it's going to happen.
The possibility is there.
Absolutely. At least a festival or something, you know?
Totally. Like, we'll play Vakken and Megadeth will be headlining it, and I'll find him.
Yeah.
We'll talk about, we'll see what he possibly knows about Henry.
Yeah, and then you can come back and tell me, because
I'll get back on the show and I'll let you know what Dave thinks about that now that he's found God, you know.
Yeah. I need to know.
Yeah.
Well, yeah,
I could email my A&R guy and ask him to get the question into Dave. Maybe I'll try that. We'll see.
Why not? I support this 100%.
Okay. All right. I'll do it for you.
Great. I appreciate it. And then, yeah, you can come back. We'll do the follow-up.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Well, I want to do another one of these anyway, because like I said before, we scrape the surface and there's like tons. We should do a death metal episode.
Oh, so man.
We can get into hypocrisy and all their alien stuff and blood incantation and Nile and all that stuff, you know?
Yeah. Which, I was really intrigued by the, what is it, the Egyptology stuff of Nile and hypocrisy's got albums upon albums of content.
Yeah. I feel like each one of those bands would probably have to be like their own episode.
Oh yeah. And there's plenty more. I mean, like I said, we're obviously not going to mention every single band and every single song, but there's so much out there.
Yeah.
There's so much out there, Aris. So much that we don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. It's totally out there, man. But you know what? Like we checked some of it out. We dipped our toe in the pool and, you know, we met some interesting characters and heard some interesting stories through music. And I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah, man. It's fun. I'm glad we did this, and let's definitely stay in touch and do it again.
Yeah. I'm down to do it again, man. It's super fun. But yeah, we can trade, responsibilities and research responsibilities again, like break it up. I like that because, like I said, lazy.
Yeah, well, I like that too, because for the same reason.
Yeah, and you got a child to wrangle and stuff, you know.
True.
I have a dog and a wife. It's pretty easy to take care of.
Sometimes not so much, but you know. Dogs can be unruly.
Yeah, mine's not. He's pretty lazy, but you know, it's cool.
Cool, man. Well, go get off here, start blasting some Ace, and have a good Saturday, man.
Yeah, that's the plan. I'll see what the sun has to offer.
Yeah. It's a beautiful day. It's a beautiful day in Portland, Oregon. Keep your eyes to the sky.
Yeah. Cool, man. I'll check you later.
All right, cool. Later, Aris.
See you, bud.
All right. There it is. There it was. Aris Hunter Wales. That was a really good conversation, really fun time. It always is with Aris. But yeah, it was really good digging into a couple classic songs, a couple not so classic, but possibly should be. But yeah, man, everyone also check out Bewitcher's new record, Cursed Be Thy Kingdom, on Century Media Records. Brand new, just came out, and it is fucking excellent. Also check out his other band, Order of the Gash, super great band, old friends of mine. The first two tours I've ever went on in my life were with Order of the Gash, so they mean a lot to me, and they're one of the best bands in Portland, so definitely give them a listen. And yeah, man, that's it for the night. Contact me, let me know what you're feeling, let me know what you think. Find me on Instagram at Lost Rhetoric Podcast, find me on Twitter at Lost_Rhetoric, or just email me at LostRhetoricPodcast@gmail.com. Get on LostRhetoric.com. You can find links to all of this stuff. And like I said in the intro, you can go to the shop, check out the merchandise, and check it out. If you want to buy some stuff, feel free. Local orders here in the Portland area, contact me. If you want to buy something, I will drop it off so you don't have to pay shipping. I'll bring it right to your doorstep. I do not mind doing things like that. And yeah, if you want to buy smaller items and don't want to pay the shipping that is possibly a little too rich for your blood, contact me. We'll negotiate. I don't mind doing stuff like that. I just want to get the stuff in your hands. So check out the shop, check out the website, and check out every single episode I've ever done, because I love it. I love it all. I love you guys. And that's it. And please, the artist whose songs I played tonight, don't sue me. Don't sue me. All right. That's it for the week, everybody. I will see you next week. Until then, please, everyone, stay sane and stay safe.